The most precious thing a war can take is a loved one. Sometimes the violence is even more brutal when it offers no closure, no corpse to pray over, no grave to visit. When someone you love goes missing, and after years of not knowing and not hearing from them, you still hope for a reunion, it becomes a slow, painful wait. But what happens when it has been over a decade of waiting and your memories feel like the only proof that they ever existed? What do you do when there is no proof of life? Welcome to Vestiges of Violence. Here, we talk about survivors. For Human Angle, I am Sabika. These are the stories of two women whose husbands and sons went missing during the Boko Haram insurgency in northeastern Nigeria. First is Zara's story. She fled her home in Gulumba, Bama local government area in Borno State, at the height of the war 10 years ago. Zara and her husband, Baba Ganakolo, had made the difficult decision to leave separately. He would go first through Dikwa, so they wouldn't be easily targeted. But they never saw each other again, and he never returned. She later learned that soldiers picked up her husband in Dikwa, and he was later taken to the Giwa Barracks, a military detention center in Maiduguri. She did not know him for any wrongdoing or suspicious activity. There was no trial nor hearing for Baba Gana. Over the years, she has heard stories from released detainees who say that he is alive and still there. The most recent news came this April during Ramadan, the Muslim fasting period. They say he is in detention and he is known by the name Baba Gana Ali. Zara and Baba Gana had 7 children together, 2 girls and 5 boys. Her youngest, who was just a baby when his father left, is now 11 years old. And although he doesn't remember him, there's a photo of his father that he always looks at.
My son always says that he does not know his father, but when they are released one day, he will take this photo and recognize his father with it. Some people told me that when my husband was first detained in Dikwa, his hands were tied so tightly that one became paralyzed. But I can't tell my son that.
Zara keeps that photo close. She took the small image to a photographer's studio to have it enlarged. In it, Baba Gana, tall and dark, stares back at the camera, his face marked with 9 facial marks, a common feature among the Kanuri people. She remembers him as patient and kind, a gentleman who sold farm produce, including beans and maize, in the market. And they had a beautiful marriage, she says.
About a year ago, my son, who lives with my elder brother in Dikwa, said his father had called him. They exchanged greetings. He said his father asked where we were, and my son replied, "I live in Dikwa, but my mom and siblings are in Shwari."
It was the closest she had come to hearing from him in years. She says her eldest daughter still cries for her father, especially during hard times, saying their lives would be better if he were here. Zara and her children live in the Shwari IDP camp, where life has been tough. She struggled to make ends meet while trying to earn through petty trading. The last thing Zara's husband told her was that he hoped they would meet in good faith and good health. She has held onto that hope for over a decade as though her life depended on it. The second story is that of Yecha Ali, a 60-year-old mother grieving the loss of her son, whose whereabouts remain unknown. On the day Boko Haram attacked her village in Bama local government area, years ago, she lost 9 relatives, including her husband. Then soldiers came and announced they were conducting a screening. They gathered all the men in the village in front of the district head's home. Dozens of them were forced into a military truck and taken to Dikwa, then to Maiduguri. Her son, Muhammad Mukhtar, whom she fondly called Momodu, was 24 at the time and ran a small perfume business. Yecha later heard that a 24-year-old man had been among those taken. That was 14 years ago. She never saw Momodu again. Her tall, dark-skinned, sociable son, who had always taken good care of her.
No one has ever told me that they've seen him or met him. We have searched and searched. We have asked and asked. We have described him to people. No news of him at all.
She and her family fled to Dikwa after the attack that killed her husband. 20 days later, they relocated to Maiduguri, where some of her relatives were already residing. It was better than the house they had been initially allowed to stay in within the city, as more aid reached the camp, and they knew people there. But 2 years later, the governor shut down the camp and resettled them in Shuari, where she now lives. When they fled their home, everything had already been burned, and they came with nothing of their own. Today, Yecha lives in the Shuari camp, holding on to fragments of memory and waiting. She and Zara share a common pain, women who lost the men they loved and raised families with, not buried, not confirmed alive, just gone. They wait with prayers, photographs, and the stories they pass down to the children who barely remember their fathers. Because now, stories are all they have to keep the memories and hope from fading. This story was reported and written by Sabiga Bello. Multimedia editor is Anthony Asamota, and executive producer is Ahmed Salkida. In order to protect the identities of survivors, we use voice actors for this episode. If you or anyone you know have a story to share on Vestiges of Violence, do not hesitate to get in touch with us.